You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to the SmartCast Micro Learning podcast series on ulcerative colitis hosted by Med Learning Group. My name is Kia Jones, Medical Director at Med Learning Group, and I will be the host of today's podcast. This is the first of five podcasts in the series titled Treatment Selection in Ulcerative Colitis, Optimizing Outcomes Through Patient-Centered Decision-Making. Today's episode will focus on bowel urgency in ulcerative colitis, or UC, and its impact on patient quality of life and treatment selection. Joining me today is Dr. Marla Dubinsky, co-director of the Susan and Leonard Feinstein IBD Clinical Center, professor of pediatrics and medicine at the Icahn School of Medicine, Mount Sinai, and chief of the Division of Pediatric GI and Nutrition at Mount Sinai Kravis Children's Hospital in New York, New York. Welcome, Dr. Dubinsky. It's so good to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Kia.
Awesome. So, Dr. Dubinsky, can you begin by just explaining what bowel urgency is and how it affects patients with ulcerative colitis?
So first, defining it is important. So bowel urgency really is the sudden and immediate need to have a bowel movement. And when you ask me, like, why is that so important to patients, I think it's important to remember that bowel urgency is one of the most important described burdensome symptoms for patients with UC. We're so used to focusing on rectal bleeding, stool frequency, endoscopy findings, and having a dialogue around sort of the disease activity measures. But when you really ask patients what symptom, when we say most burdensome, we should also say most impacts your quality of life. And we know from the data we've received from the CONFIDE survey, which was a survey that was conducted in Europe, Japan, US, where we actually anonymously asked patients, what are the symptoms that are most burdensome to you? And what are the symptoms that you really want your treatments to be able to solve? And interestingly enough, although rectal bleeding obviously worries our patients and providers, it ends up that what patients really want solved is revolved around bowel urgency and the possible outcomes of bowel urgency. For example, having a bowel accident. Because if you can't make it to the bathroom on time, you really are at risk of having an accident. And why is this so important? It's important because once patients have incontinence or have a bowel urgency accident or bowel urgency related accident, it forever remains at the forefront of our patients' minds. Meaning, patients would tell you they'd rather have 3 to 4 stools for which they have time to go to the restroom and are able to defer. So when we say deferral time, how long before you have the urge to go and actually needing to reach a toilet, they would tell us that if I can have control over 4 or 5 stools, even if there's a little bit of rectal bleeding, what really bothers me is even if I had 1 stool that was associated with urgency and if I've ever had an accident with that bowel urgency episode, it really will forever change my experience with UC. The problem is that providers are often waiting for patients to bring up this issue, and patients are often embarrassed or feel like maybe they're the only ones that are experiencing this symptom and don't disclose it at a visit because our visits are so focused on, as noted, disease activity that sometimes we forget about what matters to the patient. So we're at a disconnect, right? We've got providers who aren't asking because they think patients are going to let them know. And we have patients who really don't want to disclose it. So I think we have to do better at understanding what are the symptoms that most impacts our patients' ability to live their best life daily and exhibit some control over their condition.
I see. And you know what? That's really an excellent point. I can imagine having a bowel accident to be completely, you know, like life altering, and you're going to want to do whatever you can to avoid something like that happening in the future. So it makes complete sense that that would be, you know, pretty high up on the patient priority list. So you mentioned bowel urgency as one of the most bothersome symptoms. Can you discuss potential factors that could contribute to bowel urgency? Are there any potential triggers or things that may cause that?
Yeah, so thanks for asking around like what, you know, what could cause it and what are ways that we can try and solve this problem? So as noted, it's multifactorial. And what I would say is if we divide it in phases, so let's take a patient who is also having stool frequency and rectal bleeding in addition to urgency. That most commonly is due to the fact that they've got active inflammation in their rectum or the rest of their colon that is contributing to this sort of conglomerate of symptoms that we call active ulcerative colitis. But then as you get patients progressing through symptom reduction, like rectal bleeding has resolved, or they have 50% improvement or normalization of their stool frequency, we know that there are a subset of patients who still continue to report urgency. And as a matter of fact, in the mirikizumab trial, where we first studied this in a controlled manner, we saw that in the induction phase, bowel urgency went down as the other symptoms went down as well, or signs. But as you got to the end of the year of the trial, that even in patients who had resolution of those other symptoms, they still complain about urgency. So one of the factors that may contribute is sort of this concept of lack of compliance of the rectum when it has been inflamed for so long. Chronic pelvic inflammation can't be good in the sense that we do rely on our pelvic floor for continence. And so we do see pelvic floor disorders in patients. Some of it is mind-body dysregulation. So there's also this concept of pelvic floor in response to anxiety and or persistent worries around not making to bathroom on time. So it could also be food related, that there are certain foods that when I eat it, I immediately have a cramp and need to go to the bathroom. So I think when you're sitting with patients and trying to uncover the etiology of the bowel urgency, I think you need to separate it in those with other symptoms that are congruent with active, you know, inflammation in the colon versus those that are incongruent and more sort of focus on whether we address the dietary drivers of maybe urgency, but we must uncover the behavioral health and the emotional aspects around being worried about urgency and really get our patients to see the right specialists who can help patients with the impact of this disease on holistically on both the mind and the body.
Absolutely. And that's really an excellent point. You know, you're wanting to provide patients with holistic care. So yeah, that's actually very, very interesting. And it brings me to my next point. So we've discussed how bowel urgency contributes to the overall patient burden, and it is significant. I imagine because of this, you know, bowel urgency is factored into treatment satisfaction. So can you talk about some of the treatment approaches and strategies that you use for your patients to manage bowel urgency in UC?
Yeah. So, I mean, you're sort of in a way asking the question regarding follow-up to the last discussion, because really the question really is once we've dissected out the etiology, sort of the background disease activity versus whether or not there's an active disease, let's break those down. So let's take a scenario where my patient has had improvement in their overall, they're seeing 50% less blood, they're seeing 50% less bowel movements a day, but their urgency is not being resolved. So one of the important things that I think we leave out when we think about treatment of UC in patients who have disease beyond just the rectum, we often unfortunately forget the importance of local rectal therapy. That we sort of get into a trap whereby if we treat the whole colon, the rectum will follow. But that's not always the case. Sometimes the rectum is the hardest and last thing to get better. So I think what we first have to start with is when we're focused on disease that occupies the whole colon, is whether we combine a rectal or local therapy to help patients with these urgency symptoms when there's ongoing other disease activity and we're seeing some partial response, meaning maybe other things, as noted, got better, but they're still suffering from urgency. Don't forget about the importance of local rectal therapy. So that's a low-hanging fruit place to start. Then, if we still have patients who have significant improvement in their symptoms, rectal therapy, though, is not quite happening, we cannot underestimate the need to advance our therapies. Some may say, well, I'm going to give them oral mesalamine, I'm going to give them rectal mesalamine, and things should get better. And we're not having a discussion on how urgency is so burdensome that we should be stepping up our game and thinking about using advanced therapies much sooner. So I think part of this dialogue around urgency as a new bar for which maybe we're happy with rectal bleeding and stool frequency improvement, and that's, to be fair, the only sort of outcome until the mirikizumab study and until more recently etrasimod and more recently with upadacitinib, where even urgency was looked at, not necessarily in the same way. For example, with upadacitinib, it was a yes-no answer, and then mirikizumab and etrasimod used the urgency numeric rating scale to measure urgency severity. But until more recent times, we were so laser myopic on stool frequency and rectal bleeding that we were not escalating patients to advanced therapy despite them still suffering from urgency. So I think the ability to talk about going beyond our sort of standard mesalamine-based therapies or rectal is to move quicker to advanced therapies in the face of urgency. We have now a new bar for us to help our patients. So that's on the pharmacologic intervention. But when you talk about lifestyle and maybe complementary, what I'd say is that there are also foods that patients feel do trigger a more urgent need to use the bathroom. So it's about digging into those, but without developing avoidance food restrictive behaviors. Because what happens is that there's some interpretation of the connection between all of these foods and meaning to go to the bathroom. Therefore, sometimes it could result in malnutrition. So us having an open dialogue around maybe some of the foods that patients perceive as being drivers, maybe helping them uncover what really are the drivers and making sure that they're staying nourished during this time of avoiding certain foods that may actually impact urgency. I think probably one of the most important things is what I've sort of alluded to earlier, is that there is such an intense brain-gut connectivity with the brain and centralization of the anxiety around urgency or the anticipation of having an accident once you've had it at least one time. I think we are not using our behavioral health specialists to help our patients manage the holistic approach to managing a condition such as UC, with the ability to do some breath work around urgency, meeting with our behavioral health specialists that could tell us what to do when we have either anticipated we're not going to find a bathroom or we're anticipating urgency versus actually how to manage in the moment the strategy of bowel urgency. So I really do believe we're doing a patient a disservice if we don't recognize and understand the need for them to get some holistic approach to this problem.
Right, right. I completely agree with everything that you've brought up. Very, very great points. So it sounds like there's a number of interventions and options if both the patient and the provider are on the same page and they're communicating properly. So are there ways that we can address the communication gaps between healthcare providers and patients regarding bowel urgency and UC?
Yeah, I think what providers need to understand is that 50% of our patients report an urgency episode at least once a day. And the fact that, as noted, we're waiting as providers based on the confide survey for patients to bring it up, yet it's happening in most of our patients at least once a day and they're embarrassed, what it means is that we as providers need to take the bull by the horns and actually start asking the right question. We need to be asking them yes or no about urgency, forget about severity for a minute, but just the pure question of, are you experiencing urgency? Are you having an accident? Are you experiencing severity of urgency that you can quantify for me? And if we use sort of this concept of the urgency NRS, which is the urgency numeric rating scale, which as noted is a scale from 0 to 10. So it's an 11 point scale, with 0 being no urgency, 10 being the worst possible urgency. Where are we starting from? And what is my goal as a physician to try and get you to have an improvement? When we've asked patients, even just a 3 point improvement is meaningful change for a patient. So going from a 10 to a 7 or a 6 to a 3, for example, and of course, going from 3 to 0 would be fantastic, or anybody of our patients going to 0 would be wonderful. So I think asking the question is important, recognizing that patients are often embarrassed. We need to normalize, validate that that is not something we will tolerate, and we will do everything possible to help them with that symptom. And please don't ever forget to our listeners that in the Confide survey, almost 50% of our patients reported needing to wear a pull-up, a diaper, some form of protective garment every week. So the idea that we are not even asking that question also should point to the fact that we as providers have a responsibility to ask the question, because for sure, patients are very embarrassed to bring up the fact that they're a 19-year-old in a dorm wearing a pull-up. I mean, we have to be ahead of that, and we need to have that empathetic, validating conversation with them to make them feel comfortable to discuss this issue with us so we can help.
Absolutely. Well, it sounds like we are heading in the right direction, meaning, you know, it sounds like patients and providers are finally getting on the same page, and the awareness is, you know, increasing, which is obviously good for, you know, both. So thank you so much for your time. I've definitely learned a lot. I'm sure our listeners have as well. You've brought up some very, very important points. And yeah, I appreciate your time today for this very insightful conversation surrounding bowel urgency and ulcerative colitis.
Well, thank you so much for giving me the platform, because this is something that really will benefit all of our patients suffering from ulcerative colitis.
Absolutely. And thank you to our listeners for joining us. This podcast was brought to you by Med Learning Group. Med Learning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I would like to also give a special thank you to our grant supporter, Lily, who provided an unrestricted grant for this educational activity.